And welcome to the Herb Doctor podcast with Dr. Dealish Clare and myself, Katrina Hegarty. And a very good afternoon, Dealish.
Good afternoon, Katrina.
So how are we doing today?
It's been a week of a fire at our clinic, so we are coping with a lot at the moment.
Yes.
But I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of information about thyroid condition. Do we need the medication if we're on it? And what are the herbs that if we do need the medication or when to present to a herbalist and some suggestions for herbs to use?
Fantastic.
Lovely.
Yeah, so I will say on a personal note this, I'm on Eltroxin, so it'll be definitely worthwhile for me to listen to as well and anybody else that's on it.
It's useful for everybody because there is a massive... It's one of the biggest autoimmune conditions affecting people. The escalation in prescribing over the last 20 years has been extraordinary. Mm. It's very relevant to all women at the menopause because it's a time that's very vulnerable to this. So some of the herbs will be overlapping with the menopause. And vulnerability occurs at any time when there's a hormonal shift. So it's also relevant for women remaining healthy during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And have some dietary guidelines for the whole population, but again, particularly for fertile women and teenagers.
Great.
This is a general interest discussion topic. So,
okay,
shall we head?
Yes, let's go.
Okay. So the reason that brought this came to my attention of, oh my God, people don't know this, right? Mm-hmm. Was an article that I read, which explained how a lot of people who are taking Eltroxin might not actually need it.
What?
So what happens is people go to the doctor, they get thyroid blood tests, their TSH is a bit raised, their T4 is normal, and they are diagnosed as subclinical hypothyroidism. So to explain that, T4 is the marker that we use for the activity of the thyroid gland. But it's not actually the thyroid hormone that does the work at cell level. That's called T3. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that it's a marker for saying this system is under stress. And the guidelines have been more and more towards liberal prescribing. But many people who have this irregularity of their numbers, they don't go on to develop clinical signs of hypothyroidism. Mm. So if you're in that situation, the Eltroxin isn't earning its keep. It's not needed. So it's a drug that contributes a lot to polypharmacy, where people are on many drugs, and it's one of the drugs that I would suggest needs to be assessed. So I'll put figures on this because they shocked me. A systemic review, this was in 2021. All of the references will be attached to the podcast. A systemic review and a meta-analysis, right? So if you're talking about the relative gold standard of reviews, and these would be fairly large reviews, it should be fairly good information in to analyse. That's one of the critiques of these kinds of studies. Approximately 37.2% of patients remained normal thyroid levels after discontinuing the medication. 37.2%. We can break that down. Success rates were significantly higher for those originally diagnosed with subclinical low thyroid, which is, as I said, the elevated TSH, but normal T4, compared to those without overt hypothyroidism, which is where you have an elevated TSH and a low T4.
Mm, okay.
Do you want me to say it again?
Yeah, do.
High TSH, normal T4, does not necessarily need treatment.
Right, okay, I get it.
Elevated TSH and low T4 is taken as an indicator that you don't have enough thyroid looking after the energy mechanisms in your cells. Okay.
Got it.
To clarify, the TSH comes from the pituitary. Mm-hmm. The T4 comes from the thyroid gland, which is a H-shaped gland in front of the windpipe. with the H's on either side of the windpipe, just to put some picture on it for people. Sure, yeah. I like pictures. So specifically 35.6% of those who had no symptoms and the T4 was normal they stayed euthyroid after you stopped the Eltroxin, whereas only 11.8% of those with high TSH but low T4 became normal thyroid after stopping the Eltroxin. But that's 10%. That's more than 10%. It's 12% actually of people where even if the T4 was normal. In other words, the thyroid might be, like all hormones, glands secreting hormones, it may be something that recovers, that fluctuates, and these tests were taken at a time of particular strain and stress, and when that was dealt with, the thyroid went on functioning normally. The thyroid drug wasn't needed, right? Or is no longer needed. It was needed at the time, but because it's assumed when you go on thyroid medication that it's for life, it's never then retested. So what this article is saying is that just because you're on thyroid medication, unless you had the kind of thyroid that was symptomatic, and I'll go through the symptoms where you have symptoms of the thyroid inadequacy, but it's worth checking. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you go to your doctor and you follow their guidelines. Mm. Okay? So there is a recommendations for your doctor as to how to do this. It's not complicated, but it's something that you should definitely do under medical supervision. Okay, just a little small thing. This is actually a big thing. Always take your thyroid medication when you're fasting, preferably for 4 hours, but as close to 4 hours as you can. So that for most people, that means first thing when you get up in the morning. And don't eat anything for at least 30 minutes, but for as long after that as you can. The other thing is that, which I didn't know, so thank you again, I learn things when I do this research for the podcast, biotin supplements can affect your thyroid readings, your thyroid levels, when it's tested. So you need to stop them for 5 days. And these are commonly in supplements for hair, nails and, that kind of thing. So just worth mentioning. The other thing that's worth mentioning is that the normal levels change with age. So if you're over 65 to 70, a TSH between 5 and 6, it can be considered normal, whereas the usual range that's given for the whole age range of the whole population is 4 to 10. So as you get older, the TSH level can be considered normal at a slightly higher level than the rest of the population. And these can be useful for putting things in perspective. You know, if you're put on, you can imagine if you were 70 and your TSH was slightly raised, your T4 was normal, you actually had a normal profile and your doctor was following the guidelines. The doctor isn't doing anything outside of the usual protocol. But these are the things that finesse your medication for you. Mm. So the more you know about these things, that's how I feel. The more agency that individual patients have. And these protocols are influenced by changes in knowledge and history, and they're controversial. It's not like there's a huge body that says this is the only thing that can be done. Doctors differ as well, so that's important too. I think
absolutely.
But being able to stop the medicine, if it's not needed, it restores a quality of life of an unmedicated person or a person who's not medicated for no reason, and therefore reduces the side effects, and it saves time and money. But it also gives people the freedom to be not medicated. It's like a mental freedom of not being dependent on a pharmacy and hospital appointments and or GP appointments and blood tests and everything. From a herbal point of view, we treat the commonest cause of low thyroid, and other things need to be eliminated. And I would always recommend having a thyroid antibody test to see whether this is an autoimmune condition. It doesn't, from the straightforward medical management, they don't do it because it doesn't make any difference to the treatment. But from the point of view of herbal medicine, treating the autoimmune terrain, it's treated as an autoimmune condition, not a hormone deficiency.
Right.
So it's a whole different terrain that you're treating. So the herbal influences or actions that we want will be based on normalizing the immune system, because unlike having frequent infections, the autoimmune problems are that parts of the immune system are overexcited, they're overstimulated, or they're erratic. And they can occur in flare-ups. So you're likely to need different levels of immune activity in your herbs that you're using.
Yes.
So you want herbal modulators rather than herbal inhibitors. Most herbal immune herbs are modulators rather than stimulators. So a modulation means that if your immune system is overexcited, it'll calm it down. If it's running at a low par, it'll build it up.
Does that mean like you've got like an overactive thyroid and an underactive thyroid?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one is slow and the other one is speeds up. Okay.
And I'm only dealing with the hypothyroid.
Okay.
And I'm glancing over the surface. You could do a 3-day seminar conference. So the herbal, I think people, if they have an autoimmune disease, should see a medical herbalist, and they would be looking to have an influence on immune system as modulators, nutrition, which includes assimilation. So that's all digestive health. It's not just what's on your plate, it's how it's assimilated. And often with autoimmune conditions, there is a problem with the tightness and the what's allowed to go across the digestive system. We were talking about this, I think, in the last one of the podcasts. Nervines, because an immune regulation, and even stopping a medication, grief, menopause, all of these things can be times of particular susceptibility to autoimmune conditions and lots of other things. So nervines would be very important, which are restorative to the nervous system. So hormone balance, because while it is an autoimmune condition, it's an immune condition, of a hormone producing gland. So you would also want to balance all of the immune, particularly the adrenal gland, which manages stress, right, and puts us into kind of overstimulated, and then a gland can get exhausted, you know. So now that's not a medical term; that's kind of how a herbalist would see it. That system has too much work to do, and as my viewpoint is that anything that means that the adrenal gland is overproducing over a prolonged period of time will eventually lead to sidebar effects on the pancreas and the thyroid gland. So those are the three kind of core, and those along with the immune system and nervous system transmitters, again, makes a palate. It's like looking at the whole thing as a palate rather than a hormone deficiency, okay? Which it is. It's both. But what we're saying is that many people are medicated in the absence of a hormone deficiency and left on medication for life. That's the problem. We also have a group of herbs called adaptogens. And there's one in particular, which is ashwagandha, which is a particular for that nervous system, gland system. It's particularly useful. And I will say here that it's one of the 115 herbs that are being, I would say, over-assessed in order to be regulated in the line of in the supposed intention of safety for the public. I would argue that the relative safety of having these herbs to treat people's medical needs outweigh the very, very unlikely safety issues. Mm. That's basically it. There's going to be another raft of regulations proposed which will significantly affect what herbs people are available to people to either look after themselves, or if they go to a medical herbalist, there will be restrictions on what's available through a medical herbalist. So I'll come back to that.
Yep.
There'll be lots more to be said about that. And the other thing is, the bottom line behind all of this is inflammation.
Yes.
Okay. So you can see how I can't give this herb will manage everybody's terrain, individual, personal terrain, because that's going to be different for every individual person.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the relative balance of those is what is the biggest effect on what's individualized. Like for some people, there's major digestive problems, which is caused the stress to begin with. For other people, that's just an also-ran, mm-hmm. right, where we presume that there's an issue because of the generalized inflammation, if for nothing else. Okay. Now, what people can do to protect their thyroid, and this is the whole population, is Nigella sativa seeds, okay, which are, or black seed oil. Nigella seeds are black seeds. They're used very commonly in Middle Eastern cooking. I find them lovely. Most of my patients find them a nice additive. It's not a very strong taste. You can take them on your porridge. You can put them in a yogurt. You can cook them in your food. Very, very nice. Herbs that are particularly useful include ginger, and I would say dandelion root. They would be two that would be particularly good for people to include in their general approach to looking after their health. That's what they shop and buy and eat, in mm-hmm. other words. Yeah, very. I did look up every herbalist that's been taught herbal medicine in the last 40 years will have been told that there's a problem with lemon balm and hypothyroidism. And I'm just, you know me, I love to challenge things. This is based on in vitro testing, which is in a test tube, using extracts of auto-oxidized constituents that inhibit receptor binding and biological activity of Graves immunoglobulins. So they had an altered extract. It wasn't like the lemon balm you pick from your garden. They had auto-oxidized constituents and in a test tube saw what they did to isolated immunoglobulins, which are the protein that the antibodies attack. And then they tested it on beef and human thyroid tissue, so in a test tube. Can you imagine all the steps that it takes to get from the plant to the tea, tincture, powder, digestive tract, and then what's altered by the gut flora, what's absorbed across the gut wall, what's detoxed in the liver and eventually delivered to the thyroid gland.
Mm.
There are so many steps in there that to kind of go on the basis of this, to go, oh, lemon balm shouldn't be used in thyroid issues is a massive step too far.
Mm.
It's very hard. You might look up what are the side effects of taking L-troxin, and it's very hard to differentiate from them from over treatment. To be honest, in my many years of practice, the biggest problem that my patients have had with L-troxin is that their symptoms aren't resolved.
Mm.
They still feel tired. Their muscles are still sore. Their periods aren't any better. And they're now realizing there's a reason for this, which is that some people don't have have a different genetic profile that make it very hard. Because L-troxin is delivering T4
mm.
and the active blood substance is T3, that some people have a different genetics so that they don't actually convert the T4 to the T3.
Yeah.
So that's one reason. There's a whole, listen, I could be here for 3 days, but that's a very obvious one. And the other thing is that there's a relative deficiency of iodine. Now, you have to be careful with iodine. You don't want to be ingesting massive amounts of supplemental iodine because large amounts of it is toxic. But 60% of pregnant women in Ireland are deficient in iodine.
Wow.
60%.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And there's also a higher incidence in all women, particularly of fertile age. Well, that would tie in. And teenage girls.
Wow.
So teenage girls are not eating fish or seaweed.
Yeah.
In the general population in Ireland, the majority of the population are at the bottom edge of the WHO guidelines. So, you'll never guess what I'm going to recommend for people to put in their diet.
Tell me. Go on.
Give a stab at it. What are the teenage girls not eating? Seaweed and fish.
Yeah, iron. Yeah.
Poor Katrina is looking worried in case she's like she's at school.
Because it gives me sorry. Yeah, easy. Yeah.
and there's also a higher instance in the Midlands because we absorb some from the iodine in the air if you're in the coastal, living in coastal areas close to the sea. I support the use of iodine because it also has sea minerals, right? So we're going to add that. We're going to say the nigella seeds because it's anti-inflammatory. It was highly recommended during all the cytokine flares. And these flares of the immune system are like those flares from infection, except it's an auto reaction. We're reacting to our own tissues.
It reduces inflammation. Is that what you're saying?
The seaweed, the iodine in seaweed. Yeah, it's part of the general background. It's an essential trace mineral.
But isn't there iodine in salt as well? Isn't that like a...
One of the problems is that people are eating the Himalayan salt and the...
kosher.
All of those different salts now. There are different problems with the iodized salt. The iodine might look good, but it's not necessarily a natural equivalent.
Okay.
And there's other additives to anti-caking agents and all of those kinds of things. So it's a better solution, I think, to actually eat some seaweed. And, you know, you're looking at in Japan, they eat a massive amount of seaweed. Now, we might be genetically differently. We might not be able to eat massive amounts. We don't know the answers to these questions.
Sure, yeah.
But we should be eating some. You know, so, and the easiest way to do it is to put some, you can get sea salad, you can buy carrageen moss, you can buy dillisk, you can eat the dillisks. Some people, I have a friend who used to eat it like chewing gum.
And then you have those kind of dry, flat kind of, you know, the way they roll the sushi and that.
Yeah.
You can eat that too?
We have that down on the prom in Galway.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It looks like black plastic bags on the rocks. And people are afraid they'll slip on it. It's not actually that slippy. That's actually one of the lower contents of iodine. The bladder racts. Now, if there's nothing dangerous on the sea, in the sea, you know, within swimming distance. You want a clean beach, you know, you don't want it right next door to factories and all the rest of it.
Would this be a source of fiber as well?
Fiber, micronutrients, and particularly iodine. Very few other things have the iodine.
Great.
And the other seaweed is carrageen.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, and one of the other minerals that's very useful for low thyroid is selenium. So I suggest that people in general anyway take a multi-mineral, more so than a multivitamin, because the soil has been degraded since the 1950s. And that's been measured by agricultural science. That's not a makey-uppy thing from, you know, So looking at the unwanted effects of the L-troxin is very difficult because what they list... And so don't be scared when you look it up and it lists all kinds of issues. Mm. These are really, if it's poorly managed, if you're not within the right therapeutic range. So they're symptoms of hyperthyroidism. So, as I say, the biggest problem is that people still feel unwell. Oh, what I didn't do was, what does the thyroid do? The thyroid it determines how fast or slow you convert nutrients to energy. So it generates heat at cell level, and it stimulates the liver to break down stored sugar and fat. And it enhances protein synthesis so that helps to repair muscles, to keep, maintain and repair muscles. So if you're if you have low thyroid, you can be increasing weight, have a slow heart rate, sensitivity to cold, brain fog, fatigue, dry skin, brittle nails, thin hair, constipation, muscle soreness or weakness, hoarse voice, and irregular or heavier periods. They're the main symptoms. Mm-hmm. So if somebody was complaining of these symptoms, went to the doctor, they found that their thyroid was irregular and that their antibodies were raised, they're unlikely. They only 11.3% of those are likely to be able to come off their thyroid. Mm. But if you went and in your routine tests, and that's one of the reasons why it's being prescribed more, is that people are just coming up with these on routine tests. Mm. And the protocols say that they should be on thyroid medication, and that's the 37% of those are unlikely to need the medicine. And if people do have that raised thyroid and normal T4, even in the presence of antibodies, only 2% of people with autoantibodies and the associated change in their test results, only 2% will go on to develop clinical hypothyroidism. So that's quite a low percentage. And about 10 to 15% of people who are going around, you know, in good health, normal thyroid tests, 10 to 15% of them will have antibodies to thyroid proteins.
Can I ask
a question?
So
it's complex. Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so I've been, you know the way you have Facebook pages for this, that and the other?
Yeah.
And one thing that came up on thyroid pages was Hashimoto.
Yeah, that is Hashimoto's, is the autoimmune thyroid okay. disease. Yeah.
Just so, you know, like if anybody's out there listening and
great,
heard
sure.
this word
yeah.
before. Hashimoto, and you're saying it's the autoimmune.
Yeah. Okay. And the autoimmune can give you low thyroid or high thyroid. So
oh,
that's why
right.
I wasn't specifying
yeah,
whether
yeah.
it was the Hashimoto's that was the principal condition that, like, or scenario that I was discussing.
I get you, yeah.
And people with Hashimoto's can become high normal thyroid. It's like once a flare of autoimmunity settles down, they can then become euthyroid.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. And you don't monitor the autoantibodies because the amount of autoantibodies doesn't reflect the degree of symptoms.
Okay.
Okay,
right.
So they're useful things for people to know.
Yeah.
So that when they go to the doctor, they're aware of all of these things.
Yeah.
Okay. There's barriers to deprescribing. One of the biggest areas in... this is good news. You know I love the good news,
mm-hmm.
Katrina.
Yes, you do.
Is, so there's a big emphasis now on deprescribing, where doctors are more and more engaging with deprescribing. And I think that's really good.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of doctors who are not happy with all of this polypharmacy and like multiple consultant-directed answering lots of different protocols, but their patients are ending up in a not too happy state because they're on so many medications and they're at risk of other illnesses,
yeah.
And at risks of diseases actually caused by the polypharmacy.
I always think that it's good to go and have a review with the doctor about your medication.
Absolutely.
Do you know?
Yeah.
From a personal level, I do that myself, like to see if I can reduce stuff or maybe change stuff or something like that.
But you go to your doctor who is very enthusiastic about making sure that you're not exposed to anything that's not necessary.
Absolutely.
And the opposite is true. When people come and see me, they sometimes come and say, "Oh, I want to stop such and such a drug." I had a patient yesterday who tolerates medication very poorly and actually had a very, very good results with natokinase for peripheral vascular disease. Okay. And it improved her symptoms significantly along with the herbs. So that was a very nice combination. What started me off on that? Oh, yeah. But she has her blood pressure is significantly high and she is tolerating an ACE inhibitor for her blood pressure. So having been on 4 or 5 medications, she's now on 1 medication, which she's tolerating very well.
Brilliant.
And she did try stopping it and her blood pressure went up again. And I said, look, that's fine. You know, you're feeling well. Your blood pressure is responding well. It happened to be a very low dose. I'm not particularly concerned whether a dose is low or middling or high. It has to be the right one for that person to do the job.
Of course.
Is the most important thing. She said, oh, right. She was so anti-medication of all kinds. Mm. Based on her experience, it wasn't a philosophy, but she kind of assumed because she couldn't tolerate most drugs that she had to get off all of them. Whereas in fact, she was tolerating this well and it was managing her blood pressure. So that's just an example of collaborative care.
Yeah.
Because we have to be responsible. I've come up with a good concept for me every morning is my body safe in my hands? And for some of us, our bodies are safer with medication, and for many, many more than are having it available to them at the moment, many, many more, their body would be safer in the hands of using herbal medicines from everything from, you know, their heartburn and indigestion to lots of things,
yes, of course,
that they're currently on medication for, but they don't have access. And that's a lot of what gave me the impetus to write this book.
Yes,
because without public patronage, without your tax money being spent on herbs, without your tax money investigating herbs, without a perspective of learning from our mistakes, there's a problem with eroding trust. And I think we need more trust for herbalists, for doctors, for collaboration, for nutrition, for all kinds of things. Massage, acupuncture. Like this isn't a one-stop shop. There never has been a one-stop shop. Mm. never has been one kind of medicine that dealt with everything.
Yeah, which people probably would think there is. Do you know what I mean? As in, you know, without even thinking about the herbal or the acupunctural side or all the holistic whatever side, that they just go the doctor and...
Yeah, because there's no knowledge. The other thing I would emphasise is if your blood tests are normal, every year you have your blood test and the doctor says, oh, your thyroid stimulating hormone is a little bit high, we need to keep an eye on that. That's a very good time to go to a herbalist.
Yeah.
Because something is going to be really beyond its comfort level. Mm-hmm. That's a really good... If you don't want to be on the Eltroxan for the 10 years before you try prescribing them, that would be a good road which is less travelled.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course. That's great. from my side, from a personal side of thyroid, I've been on thyroid medication for a long time and it's always been, you know, the levels have been changed and then the T4 always kind of balances out and then it's either up or down.
Yeah.
It's always different.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I suppose for anybody out who's listening...
Yeah, that monitoring is important so that you're kept within a band range.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and your life changes. Everything in life changes. And you might be eating a lot better, have better digestion, better strength in your nourishment, in your immune system. And you might need less because it's kicking off a bit less.
Of course, yeah.
So that's why I would say, even if you're on the medication, the herbal medicine will be a good approach.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Of course, I'm biased, Katrina. But I've also had a lot of experience.
Of course you have. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I don't suffer fools gladly in terms of, I wouldn't be wasting my life or my patients' time or money. That's what it comes down to.
Well, best of luck with everything, mm-hmm. with the clinic and that, and I hope everything works out okay. Thank you for listening to the Herb Doctor podcast and about thyroids and everything mm-hmm. to do with it. And I really appreciate the information. It's been great.
Great. And feedback, as always, welcome. Your experiences, anything you want me to address, talk about, give me a particular perspective. That's always more fun.
And yeah. We also want to say thanks for all the likes and shares and everybody commenting, saying that they enjoy the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So keep sharing and keep liking and over to you, Dailish, for the last word.
Well, given the week that's in it, I just want to thank the community around me and my team at work behind all of our efforts on the dispensary, the clinic. We do have new therapy rooms. We're setting up. We'll be on the road again within the next few days. But it'll be a long haul. There's a lot of damage. Okay. So thanks to everybody.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.